Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. We help you build a thriving creative practice. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza! You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's get into today's episode. I'm tired of keeping this a secret. It's something I've wanted to tell you all for a long time, and I'm finally going to say it. I love Skillshare. I love Skillshare, and I couldn't be happier that they're a sponsor of this show. Why? Because if you want to explore new skills, deepen your existing passions, and get lost in creativity, you've got classes with Skillshare to do so. You can learn about illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, lettering, marketing, all kinds of stuff. With Skillshare short classes, you can move your creative journey forward without putting life on hold. Just like with my class, you can go to skillshare.com/creativepep to get 2 free months of premium membership and take my class for free today. We've been talking a lot about my class on this show. It can be a very powerful experience to get centered in your goals and who you are and what you're about and what you're trying to do in this time. If you're feeling imbalanced and out of whack in your creativity, this class can help you find your center and get a new sense of focus and progress. Go to skillshare.com/creativepep to sign up to my class today. Today on the show, we have Michelle Poehler. Michelle Poehler is a friend of mine from the internet, and then we became friends in real life and even better friends when we had this conversation. Michelle Poehler is a full-time public speaker. She has a new book out that's coming out this week called Hello Fears. Michelle did a 100-day project that went crazy viral where she decided she's going to face a new fear every single day for 100 days. Things as simple as camping, all the way to like diving with sharks and hanging off cliffs and public speaking and all kinds of really crazy stuff. If you want to check out the project, go to creativepeptalk.com/episodes/275 and you can go check out her whole project. It's incredible. But even more incredible is this book and Michelle's message. I had the pleasure of seeing her do a talk in an arena in Columbus like 8 months ago or something, and it changed my life. There was something, I kid you not, I had a profound experience watching her. She was so in her purpose, and it just made me want to live more authentically. I feel like some of you are like, Andy, you're already too authentic for us, but just you wait. Michelle's unleashed a new authenticity in me. You don't even know, man. But seriously, I got in touch with what I felt like my message was and what my fears were and all that good stuff. Michelle is the real deal, and she surprised me with some of the answers here. You can tell in this episode, I get really pumped about some of the stuff she said that I was not expecting, and it's a really great conversation. Go check out her book. Go buy it. Hello Fears by Michelle Poehler. Tons of practical and inspiring things about how to get past the thing that's in the way between you and the creative work that you're on this planet to do, your life's work, your creative work. It's fear. That's the thing that's holding you back. She's got a lot of answers. She knows a lot of firsthand tactics and info on how to get past those things. Here she is, Michelle Poehler. Michelle, thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I know it's been a long time coming. I've wanted to have you on the show for ages. and we have only just got to it, but it's a good time because you just had a book come out.
Yeah.
Does it feel like everybody says, like, you like birthing a baby?
It is. And you know what? It took 9 months to write. So yeah. It is literally like a baby. And you know what I'm doing for the lunch? I'm having a cake and we're blowing candles because it's my book's birthday. Like zero.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's amazing. I bet that was insane. I just got a copy of it. It's absolutely beautiful. It's packed full of, I just started reading it. Amazing stuff in there. And I've heard your story and you speak about it. For people that don't know, it's called Hello Fears. And it's about a project you did that went viral that became the foundation of your public speaking career. And it's this project that's a simple idea, but an extremely difficult thing to execute, where you did a 100-day project. You'd have to face a new fear every day, from small things like camping to, I think, like diving with sharks. Am I right with that?
So you think camping is a small thing?
Well, for me, I'm judging you. I guess a fear. Come on. You could have gone further that day.
I know.
How about wrestling a bear? Come on.
Oh, no. So the point was not to die. It was to live life to the fullest.
Right. Well, actually, the truth is, when I was reading through about the camping one, at first I thought, come on, camping, that's not scary. But then you mentioned the things you were scared of, which was at the top of that list was bugs. And I am deeply afraid of bugs. I hate bugs so much. So I feel you. I get it. Yeah. Before we get to the book, though, I want to ask, what were you like before this project? If we could go before, pre-Fears 100-day project, and we'll get to all the details of what that was. But before all this went down, could you tell me an example of or a story about how you'd avoid things that you were afraid of, or what was your relationship to fear before all this happened?
So before all of this happened, I was very happy, actually, living inside of my comfort zone. I can't say that I had a miserable life because I had so many fears, like some people would assume. Actually, I had a pretty decent life growing up. And so the only thing that was missing was that I was not really living life to the fullest. I was just having a very normal life. You know, I had a boyfriend that I loved. I had good friends. I had a college degree. I had everything you can imagine. I found a really good job in advertising as an art director. So I was checking all the boxes and I was accomplishing these things. But it was one day when I realized that I was not living, like actually experiencing my life. And I missed out on a lot of opportunities that would have made my life so much better, so much more memorable. And I missed out because I was afraid to be outside of my comfort zone. For example, when my friends decided to go backpacking through Europe, they didn't even ask me if I wanted to go. And I was happy they didn't ask me because I was like, how am I going to tell them that I can't go? And actually, I can. I just don't want to. And then, for example, growing up, all my friends went to camping. Well, like to, you know, summer camps. And I never did that. I always stayed with my family and just went on trips. So I just avoided being outside of my comfort zone. For example, when I started working, like in my early years, I avoided driving at night. So if there was like an event or whatever it is, I would miss out on it because I was like, I'm not driving by myself at night. No way. Not even with someone. I'm not driving at night, period. So I just limited my life a lot.
Now, compared to life after the project, where you are at least attempting to live life to the full, what do you feel like the current Michelle would say to the past Michelle of what she's missing because of staying in the comfort zone? What would you, now that you could compare, if you were comparing life before the project and life now, what would your sales pitch be for getting out of the comfort zone in terms of this is the thing that you're not having on a regular basis because you aren't saying yes to these things?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that I was not building a memorable life. And that is really sad because one day life will stop. And then what are some of your greatest memories if you just stayed inside of your comfort zone the entire time and you're just doing the things that you already know that you like? So yeah. Now, this Michelle, when I look back, the best moments of my life are the moments that I was uncomfortable and that I still did all those things. So if you ask me now, what's one of those moments where you felt you lived life to the fullest, I would tell you that when I went rafting in Costa Rica, and it was like rafting level 3. So it was like really hard. And I was freaking out that day and I was dying. But I was like, no, this is brave Michelle now. I need to challenge myself, even though I'm dying and I don't want to die. And, you know, like, I want to have this experience because I know it will create a memory. And I have this interesting theory of time that actually I explain all of it in the book, but I'll tell you a little bit about it. And I've been thinking a lot about this because of the quarantine, that it's that when we do many different things, we create what I call different boxes, all right? Mm-hmm. But when you do the same thing over and over again, which is called a routine, then you're just creating one box with lots of moments inside, but it's just one box. So for example, if I tell you, can you remember a time when you were brushing your teeth and you go back to that box, you're thinking of all the different times you did it, right? At the same time, because it's just one box. It's just that one memory that is the same again and again and again and again. And life can become one box if you only have a routine and you do it every single day in the same way. But when I tell you, can you remember a trip, you know, maybe in Asia or in Italy or whatever, and then you can imagine that one different box from the rest because it's like a special memory. And what I feel is that now that we're in quarantine, it just feels like one big box because every day is a little bit of the same. When my life before of this, because I'm a keynote speaker, I used to travel every 2 days to a different city. So when you ask me about my February, that was not too long ago, I have so many memories. And what I mean by this is I have so many little boxes. I remember me on stage in Vegas, and then the next day I was in New Orleans, and the next day I was all over eating at different restaurants, having different experiences. And I want my life to be full of these little boxes, these memories that will create the life that I want for myself.
Man, I love that so much. And I love that you pointed out that your pre-Fears project you wasn't unhappy or miserable, or, you know, you said you were content in your comfort, comfy zone, but that you were missing out on all of these other things by staying there, and primarily that it was making these memories. And I think that's so interesting because although we might be happy and comfortable in our routine, you know, I've heard there's this correlation between making memories, experiencing new things, with what we experience as meaning. Because for our brain interprets, if this was different, then it's worthy of remembering, and therefore it's a memory. And if it's a memory, therefore it's experienced as meaning, as this must have been meaningful. And so, yeah, you might have been living a content, so-called happy life in that routine, in the comfort zone. But I'm guessing, it sounds like what you're saying, this current life that you're living is much more meaningful. Is that right?
Oh my God, so much. That's the right word, meaningful, definitely. And you know what they say, that when you do something that you love, time goes by really fast?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a little bit of the opposite because when you look back and you say, my year flew by, it went by so fast. It's because you did so little things and you had your routine so structured that you have very few boxes. So when you look back, you're like, what, where did my year go? Right? Because you don't have a lot of memories. But when you are building all of these meaningful, memorable memories, and you look back, you're like, oh, I've done so much. And it happens also, for example, when you go on a trip and you've been in that trip for 4 days and you're like, it's only been 4 days. I feel like we've been traveling forever. And it's because you've been doing so many things that your brain is storing all of these different memories.
Yeah, that's completely true. It's so, you know, speed aside, it's even just the fullness of a year that you spent doing lots of things and creating lots of boxes can feel like a lifetime. And I've experienced that same experience. So I want to go to, okay, so we talked a little bit before this project. Then I want to talk about kind of the inception of where this came from. You went to SVA for your master's degree and you studied with Debbie Millman, who's a branding legend. And she had you do a process, talking about the 10-year thought experiment. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and what you got from it?
Yeah, so the 100-day project is really interesting. And the way that Debbie structured it in the program makes it even more like powerful.
Yeah.
Because she, for example, when you start the program, the branding program at SVA, you know there's a 100-day project coming. Everybody knows that. And she tells you from the beginning, do not start thinking of ideas for your 100-day project. And what do everybody do? Right. Everybody start thinking of ideas immediately. Uh-huh. It's inevitable. I just started a list of ideas immediately, even though she said not to. And then when it was the time to do the 100-day project, 2 or 3 weeks before that, she asked us to write a 10-year plan. But I thought it was a really interesting way of asking us that. It's not just write your life in 10 years. She challenged us to dream big. She's like, if everything goes according to plan, if everything goes right, where would you like to be in 10 years? And that was the first challenge, because it's really hard to dream big. And I have to say that I found the essay that I wrote when I was moving 2 months ago. I was packing my entire house and I found that printed piece of paper with my 10-year plan that I wrote in 2015. And I started crying. Out of happiness, because I accomplished some things that I thought I would never accomplish, or at least would take me 10 years, and I did it in less than 5. And then also out of sadness, because I felt sad for that Michelle that didn't dare to dream as big as she wanted to, because it's really, really hard to dream big. So we had to do a 10-year plan. I did it. And then the next exercise was to identify one crucial obstacle that could get in the way of your plans. And so that's when I realized that my fears have always been in the way of my plans. So like I told you, I was happy, but I was living a very comfortable life and I was not really achieving my biggest goals. I was not fulfilling my ambition, and I've always been a very ambitious person, and I was frustrated that I was not who I wanted to be at that point in my life. And so when I realized that fear, like through that exercise, was the one thing that could keep me from achieving my dreams, that's when I embarked on that one project that changed my life for good, which is the 100-day project. And I decided to tackle one fear a day.
So I don't know if you had already made this clear, but I had missed it. I had missed that in your, there's something really super powerful that I want to dig into, because so many people, when I talk to them about goal setting or vision or dreaming big for their future, you know, I rarely do that because I'm trying to get people to force things to happen or eliminate the creativity of the journey or the happenstance or the excitement, you know, all that stuff. But there's so much power in the thought experiment of asking yourself, what's a future I would like to create? And yet I feel like so many people have extreme resistance to that activity. And I don't think I always figured out why until I started diving into your story, as I realized that the number one thing that keeps people from imagining a future is fear. Is because so many things that we want are on the other side of fear. And when I read what you had wrote about what you wanted for your future in 10 years, and then how you tackled it with your project, I saw a connection that I hadn't seen before, because you talked about how 10 years from now, a big part of your future is public speaking. And then I realized that the 100th fear that you tackled was public speaking for your TEDx talk. And I, all of a sudden, I don't know if maybe you already had made it clear to everybody else and I just missed it. I thought, oh, okay. I get the complete like full circle thing that's going on here. Was that intentional? Were you aware of how that was playing out? Does that make sense to you?
So the public speaking part, when I didn't know that was a career when I wrote my 10-year plan.
Right.
I just thought that speakers were experts on a field that were invited to conferences or events to talk about their accomplishments and their knowledge.
Sure.
And
yeah.
So when I wrote my 10-year plan, I was like, I want to become an expert in branding. And so I want to be invited to speak at companies and events about my accomplishments because I'll be so accomplished by then that
right.
people will want me to have, you know, to be there
yeah.
and share my experience. So that was my dream, mostly because if I know that if I'm invited to speak at places means that I'm successful. So that was like what I thought. Mm. And then doing a TEDx was just something on my list, but I don't know. I never thought it was possible for me. And I didn't really have a topic before doing a project. And then after I faced all those fears, I felt like I had a message that I wanted to share with the world. And I'm so glad that I did it because at that event, I met a real speaker. And he's the one that encouraged me to pursue this career. And this is what I do full time right now, which is insane.
Right. So you had, I thought this is so interesting. It's such a interesting layer to your journey. Before you set out on this 100-day project, you write this thing that says, this is where I want to go in 10 years, but the thing that's stopping me is fear. And you write that in 10 years, whether it was your career or not, a big part of your little blurb of this thing is, and I'll be traveling and public speaking everywhere. And so as you go out onto this journey, that ends up being this the thing that you end up tackling and then end up becoming your career. And I just thought that was really, does that make sense? It's kind of like fuzzy, but I find this weird pattern there of, you know, this journey was the thing that ended up helping you tackle the essential part of that plan.
Yeah. And actually right before graduating, well, not right before, like during the master's in branding, I had to present quite often, like all the projects. It was a lot of group presentations during the
yeah.
master program. And every time that I presented, a lot of students and even professors approached me to tell me that they absolutely loved hearing me speak. And I was like, cool. What do I do with that? You know, so I guess that when I work at a corporation, I'll be good presenting my projects. I don't know. Like that's far as it goes. Like, what do you
yeah.
do with that skill? But I was always surprised to hear that because I was talking about branding things, nothing too inspiring. And then they're like, I don't know, Michelle, when you speak, I just want to listen to you. Like, you're so engaging the way that you express yourself. And I was like, oh, that's good to know, but what do I do with that? And I'm so
yeah.
happy I got to turn that into a full career.
I find that's really interesting too, because Stephen Pressfield, are you familiar with his
work?
Oh
my God, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense with the resistance and all that. I think there's a lot of alignment there, but he has this theory that creatives have to go on a hero's journey before they go on an artist journey. And I've kind of taken that to be like, you know, if you want to find your real gift, you're not going to find it doing a career aptitude test, you know, with the careers counselor in a half an hour in an afternoon of your high school. I really believe that, like, the act of creating, actively engaging, making stuff, it's in the thick of trying to make stuff happen
mm-hmm.
that you stumble upon your mm-hmm. true gift. And I feel like your story right there is so... it's such a great example of that. As you went into branding, and what I think is interesting about that is you didn't sit back and wait for your gift or, you know, your strengths or your path to fall out of the sky. You said yes to, I'm going to take a shot at my best hypothesis, which at the time it was branding to you. And you went and did this and you made a project and you did all this stuff. And then all out there on the journey, you found this other skill and gift that you didn't know you had. And it was on the other side of a real fear. Mm-hmm. I just find that really interesting. Yeah. Does that resonate for you? Is that how it felt like it happened?
Yeah. And you know what? The reason why I invested so much time and energy into this project, I was not only facing 100 fears, I was branding this project. Right. I was uploading a video to YouTube every single day, and it was not just any video. I would edit the video with music and even stop motion into it for the first few videos. And then I'm like, I'm crazy. Why am I doing this to myself? I don't think it needs the stop motion part. It just takes me an extra hour of my day. And I was working full time in advertising, and I was doing the master's in branding. So my life was pretty insane at that point. But my goal was to find a job and use this project as my portfolio piece. So that's why I branded it so well. I created a website. I created an emoji meter, which was super cool. So I could measure the level of fear before, during, and after each of the challenges that I faced. I would answer the same three questions every single day. I would post all over social media. And my idea was to build something that then I can go to a good company like Instagram or YouTube and show them this project. And then they would hire me because they see that I can build something that is really cool and that is engaging. And so at the end of the project, I ended up hiring myself. I never applied to any job. I just decided to create the movement Hello Fears.
And we'll link to that in the show notes, that page, because it's really cool. The emoji meter and all that stuff is really, really great. Do you feel like you're at this point in your creative journey, do you feel like branding or whatever this public speaking thing is more of a true passion and talent for you?
So you're saying between branding and public speaking or what's
I'm just wondering. I'm just curious. I'm like trying to tease out. One of my biggest interests and something that I do on the show is I'm very interested in like finding the patterns in creative journeys. And one of the ones that I've found is often we go into developing this skill and we're like, I'm a branding designer. I want to work in branding. And then while we're doing that, we discover this other talent while we're building this skill. And I'm just curious if at this point you would feel like, you developed the skill of branding and that's really served your business. But all along the way of doing this project and learning how to do branding, you discovered this other passion and talent. And I was just curious if you had thought about, whether you feel like public speaking is like a deeper calling and deeper talent.
I would have to say that branding is still my biggest passion.
Really?
And that's my biggest strength as well.
That's really interesting.
Branding. And then I use public speaking as one of the mediums. So I have several mediums where I brand myself or my movement. And then I just use those mediums as a way to communicate my brand and my message. So social media is one that I'm obsessed. I absolutely love creating my community on Instagram, posting, creating stories, like crafting my brand on social media. I'm extremely passionate about that. And then I get to speak about my message in front of so many people. And not only is me on stage speaking, but it's my presentation and it's crafting that as well. So as you can see, branding is very present in everything that I do.
I love it. I'm getting very interested and very excited about this. Quick shout out to the sponsors. Just take a little break for a minute. You know, we're dealing with fears today. Well, you don't have to be afraid to learn because Skillshare makes it easy. Skillshare.com/creativepep. Get 2 free months of Skillshare. There are so many great classes on there. And I just have this deep core value that you should always... No, not should. It's not a should thing. It's not you should always learn. That's like based in fear, like Well, I gotta stay up with the software packages and the CS. No, shut up. No, it's not about should, it's about could. It's you could. Like, you can go there for free for 2 months and go soak up your curiosity. The only thing that you have to be afraid of isn't fear itself. I don't know who said that. What you should be afraid of is losing that curious spark for creativity that gets you pumped. And if you haven't felt that in a while, go to Skillshare.com/creativepep and go search classes and find something that you're so curious about it that you're willing to learn something new. That is the secret sauce of creativity, man. Check it out, Skillshare.com/creativepep. Thanks, Skillshare. So, branding, what is it? Maybe first you can talk about, you can define what is branding to you. What is good branding? What do you think is the good stuff? Like that you're like, oh, that's the right thing, both for brands out there, but also people building personal empires and brands and for themselves. I'm very curious why branding and what does it mean to you, and what is good branding to you?
I just hope Debbie Millman is not listening to this, because I felt like a sudden pressure that I need to answer this correctly.
No, there's no correct answer. There's no correct answer because, and by the way, I know what she would say branding is. Like, I've heard her define that, and tons of good stuff.
Yep.
I'm a big fan, but I'm as big of a fan of your ability to execute and visualize and envision a brand, because you're one of the people who, to me, has one of the strongest brands, including the way that you have integrated your message through your public speaking and social media and all of those individual points. I'm not really curious at all what the right answer is to that question. I'm only curious about what your answer is, and why would you say, it really piques my curiosity. I thought for sure you were going to say, no, I found public speaking and that's my real talent. And I freaking love it. It's so fascinating to me to hear you say that branding still comes first. Branding's your true baby. And that just makes me want to be like, why? What is it? Why do you like this so much? What does it mean to you?
So to me, branding is a journey to discover your true authenticity.
Yeah. Like, by the way, that's my whole purpose of living. Yeah. I literally, before we got on this call, I was thinking about, because I started thinking about the what, like, okay, I have a podcast and then I have this, I have like kids' books and I'm working on these fictional properties and all these different things. And I'm, I'm lost in like, who am I? Because I'm getting in the weeds of the what. But then I went back to, this is like a half an hour. Oh, but I'm all about what Carl Jung called, he was like a psychologist, called the process of individuation. You'd already know. I'm not educating you. The process of individuation, or what Joseph Campbell would call the hero's journey. It's all about the journey of authenticity, the journey of discovering who am I? And you're so right. Branding is that for brands and people. Mm-hmm. But man, I didn't know you were going to say that. That's my thing. Tell me more about this.
So I think that I'm very fascinated by the true authenticity of each individual. I think that we're all so different because we are made of our own experiences and our own stories and our own backgrounds, right? Our even ancestors have so much influence in who we are today. And so I'm a big fan of people that are able to understand what their true authenticity is, tap into it, and use it to their favor, use it to actually brand themselves and whatever they do. And it's a matter of being very cohesive with what you think, what you feel, and how you act. And I think that is what creates a brand. If all of those things are in alignment, then your brand will be like, I don't know what the word is, but like,
On point?
On point, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love what you just said, because I think I'd always, I think a lot of people, when they think about personal brand or branding and someone saying they need to be cohesive, I think that people hear that as you need to put on a veneer, a superficial, you know, cover every front, make it all the same, make it all cohesive, and it being this like band-aid over a thing rather than what you're describing, which is an emanating of the truth. It's like, you know, the cohesion comes from getting in touch with the truth of who you are and then purposefully putting that out in a cohesive way that clearly states that truth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the biggest problem is that we are too focused looking outside. Mm. We spend too much time looking at other people. Now, even more with social media, it's unavoidable to every time that we see something or someone, we immediately compare ourselves to that. Are we better? Are we worse? Do we have enough of that, or are we lacking? Or, you know, everything that we see is like a point of reference to us in some way. And yeah. So we stop looking inside. And that's where your true authenticity is inside of you, is nowhere outside. If you're trying to find it outside, like when people say, I want to get inspired, let me browse through Instagram or Pinterest, you're then going to be copying something else and you're not going to be creating from within. I think inspiration has to come from within. And so I say that the difference is that people, a lot of time, they're trying to compare themselves to others when in reality, what they have to do is contrast. And the only way to contrast is by looking inside and then having the courage to bring the inside out.
Man, that's so good. Let me say, what do you have any tactics, strategies, tips for teasing out that internal inspiration? How do you tune your internal metal detector to finding that gold inside? Does that make sense? Do you have what are things that have helped you or thought experiments or whatever that's helped you do that?
So there's one exercise that I learned from Google. So when I went, not Google like the search engine, but when I actually went.
I was going to say, like, that would be amazing. Like, how do I find myself? Yeah, I got the answer on Google. That's amazing.
Oh, no. Then I realized, I'm like, wait, to everybody else, Google is just a search engine. And I'm talking about actually going to their offices and speaking to their team. And then they told me about this amazing exercise that is called I'm Remarkable Because. And it's, you know, you just have to write a list. Like, ask yourself that question. What makes me remarkable? And write it down. I'm remarkable because, and then write as many things as you can in there. And then you'll be thinking about all those little things that make you feel proud of yourself. And the idea is not to write down those big accomplishments that only happen once in a lifetime, like I won an Oscar or I graduated from Harvard. I mean, those only happen once, that's fine, but I'm not talking about that. It's little things on the day to day that makes you remarkable. So for example, I'm remarkable because I'm a good daughter. I mean, I call my mom every single day, or I cook healthy meals for my family, or I stand up for myself when I have to, or I stand up for others, or, you know, I'm a good person. I'm a good friend. Like, all of those little things that make you feel proud of yourself, you have to write them down, because we are not used to asking ourselves this question. We are always bringing ourselves down. We're always telling ourselves that we're not enough. And so that doesn't really help us. It just brings down our confidence. But when we start to realize all of the little things that actually makes us who we are, and you know how remarkable we truly are, that's when we start to build our confidence. And this exercise, you can, it has some layers to it. So the first one is to write it down. And I do this, I don't know if I did it when you came to hear me speak. Like, I do this on stage. I ask people and I give them 2 minutes to write down as many things as possible. And then I ask them to share their list with the person sitting right next to them. And they want to kill me in that moment because they're like, I need to do what? This was uncomfortable enough with myself. I can't even imagine sharing this. And I tell them, you have to read it out loud. You can't just show your notes. And so once you read it out loud, you realize that you are that person. There's everything in that list is true. You wrote it only for yourself. And then you start getting this confidence. And I always ask people, how did you feel writing it down? And everybody was like, terrible, so uncomfortable. It was so hard. And then I asked them, how did you feel when you said it out loud? And they're like, it felt good. They all agree that it actually feels good to say it out loud. So imagine if we would do this exercise more often. In fact, I carry that list with me on my iPhone, on my notes. And every time that I can, I add things to it. And then there's another layer to it that is to ask someone that is close to you, what do they think makes you remarkable? And they will tell you things that are not in your list and that you will be surprised, like positively surprised by that.
Yes, that is I was gonna say that that's something that I've done recently where I would ask friends. I asked a few close friends, you know, people that I knew were a fan of the stuff that I did, but also a close friend. You know, what's the biggest impact that I've had on you personally? And I thought that they would say something about my strategies or what, I don't know, something like that. And the funny thing is, they all said the same thing, and it was something I didn't expect them to say. And it was that the biggest impact you've had on me was that you're really weird. And I was like, okay, thanks. And they were like, no, but that you being such a weirdo and putting it out there and it working for you has really inspired me to lean into how I'm different and own it. And I hadn't really thought about it. And the funny thing is, I wasn't planning on telling you this, but I feel like I have to. When I went to go to your talk when you were here in Columbus, I had such a profound experience that I have only had maybe one other time in my life. And it was definitely stuff you were saying, but I want to say it might have even just been something about your energy that you were bringing to this talk. But I started to have this thing of getting deeper in touch with my own, as you would call, brand, mm-hmm. but my own authenticity. And I realized, sat there, and I had this, I went and called my dad and talked to him about it, talked to my wife about it, that, you know, I'd made all these things about creative career and illustration and all that. And I thought, I think there's actually a deeper calling to get people to lean into their neurodiversity. Cause I talk a lot about leaning into, you know, I lean into my ADHD mm-hmm. and I own it and mm-hmm. I exist over there. But it actually, yeah, you're watching you talk and do all that really called out a deeper authenticity in me. And I just want to tell you that not because it makes good interview content. I don't know if it does, but it's.
I feel honored hearing that. And it's also, it's not the first time I hear that.
That's amazing.
People that hear me speak and that they've been reading my book, they say that it's a self-discovery journey at the end of the day because of the questions that I ask and the way that I also present myself and there's a word that I love. I'm very, very in love with this word and is unapologetic. Mm. I think that the more that we can be ourselves unapologetically, the more authentic we'll be with us and with the world.
Man, that makes so much sense. And I also, you know, you saying that this is a personal journey for so many people reading this book and hearing you speak makes so much sense to me because I think the thing that's holding us back from being our true self is fear. It's this idea, the fear, the Joseph Campbell, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. And that cave you fear to enter, it's your shadow side. It's all the things that you know that you are, that you wish you could be, that you're afraid to embody. And those are the fears that end up controlling us and keeping us from our full creative selves. And I guess it makes so much sense that this book and this movement that you've built about facing your fears would primarily go back to facing the fears of who you're afraid to be.
And you know what's interesting? That I've always been a very authentic person. Like that's how people would describe me at every age. Like I even though I had a lot of fears, being my authentic self and showing my true self to the world was not one of my fears. Mm. So it was frustrating for me because I was like, I am this person that I have all this potential and I'm not fulfilling it because my fears are limiting me. But it was not related to my authenticities. It was related to other like small things that I was just keeping myself from achieving. And so now I just before quarantine and coronavirus and all of that, I was building a full talk about tapping into the white space and becoming your most authentic self. And my examples go from even before my project. So it's not even related necessarily to the project because I want to talk about authenticity in every stage of my life. And even the way that I applied to the branding program, you know, the SBA program, they only accept 25 and 30 people a year and thousands of people apply. And it was my biggest dream to get into that program. So the way that I even applied to the program was outside of the box and in very much aligned with who I am.
That's incredible. I also think, you know, we go out onto these journeys and I do feel like it's almost always about discovering something we had before we went on them. You know, I feel like that's so true to me. And I wonder, could you speak to a little bit about this new talk and the white space and what's that all about?
Yeah, so it goes back to the concept that I was saying before of comparing versus contrasting. And so it all goes down to the question, what is everybody else doing and how can I do it my way? Not necessarily differently, even though, yes, ideally differently, so you're not one more. But I have to say that one of my biggest fears throughout my life has been to be one more, to blend in. So I always wanted to stand out. So in order to stand out, you have to take risks. You need a lot of courage for that. So for example, like I was saying, applying to the program, the branding program takes, it's really hard to get in. So I was like, what is everybody else doing? And then I'm like, probably they're all talking highly about themselves, right? They're all trying to show how good of a fit they are for this program and how accomplished they are. And if you show a portfolio that you could, like it was it's optional to show your portfolio. And Debbie even said, if you're going to show us your portfolio, it has to be exceptional. So think about it before sending a portfolio. And I was like, you know what? I'll do it differently. I'm going to negatively criticize all of my pieces. That's what I'm going to do. So if you look at my portfolio, it's like a beautiful logo or whatever, but I'm saying everything that is wrong with it. And I'm like, so I did this and it looked nice, but big mistake. I never did the research before starting this logo. So it didn't connect with the right audience. And I just said everything that was wrong about every one of my pieces in that portfolio. And I think that's exactly what got their attention.
Man, that's so good. The thing I love about that is that advice is that it's so non-dual. So it's not, you know, either completely ignore everybody or copy everybody. It's a process of don't completely be ignorant to what's happening out there. Do your research, go figure it out. But then instead of using that to follow a trend, use that to subvert and do something totally different. It reminds me of, you know, I used to do these craft shows where I would be selling my merch and my posters and all that stuff. And I would look around at all of the setups. And as the craft show thing started to really take off, these setups, these booths became more and more cumbersome and crazy and high, you know, high end, slick, all, you know, everybody was branding this thing. And it was this huge ordeal. And I was just like, man, I'm a much messier person. And I also don't like, I don't like physical reality that much. That's just something about me. Like I'm about ideas and fantasy. And I just like, man, putting together this booth and I'm never going to measure up to all of these other people. And I unconsciously did what you just said, which was instead of trying to do what they were doing, I instead of comparing, I did the contrast, and I created this cardboard booth, super minimal, and it looks like the Charlie Brown Lucy booth. It says creative pep talks for 5 cents, and it's super crappy and lo-fi. But man, that thing worked for me better than almost anything I'd ever done in that setting. And so I can just attest, like, that's such a good practice.
And you know why? Because you are being true to your values, and it goes everything goes back to that. And that's an exercise that also we had to do in the branding program. We had to figure out what are our top three values or something like that. I'm not sure if Debbie called it values at that point, but that's how I call it right now. So what are your top values, right? And you only need to define three or four. And it took me years to figure out my values, but one of my truest values is transparency. And that's also why I decided to be very honest in my portfolio, because if transparency is my core value and I don't have a lot of filter, I just say things as I think about them. I might as well say the good and the bad about everything I do.
That's fantastic. Do you have, you know, somewhere on your phone or whatever, an ongoing list or document that documents your values?
Well, no, because I already know like what they are. So what do you mean?
What are they?
Mm-hmm. Oh, what are they? It's authenticity, courage, transparency. And then the fourth one, I don't know how to call it, but it's like good design, like things that are visually appealing. That is one of my core values. Things just really need to look well designed or nice for me to pay attention.
Oh man, that's so good. I'm going to do that. I'm going to take that as a practice. I'm very obsessed with core values. We just launched this artist management agency called Co-Loop, and you know, that thing was birthed from a vision and core values. Like everything we've done has been intentional, but I haven't been, it's been a while since I really addressed that. And I would love to have my core values be as second nature to me that I could just list them in the way that you did. So I feel like that's a good practice for any of the people listening.
Oh, so good. Like absolutely everything I do, from a post to the way that I talk to my mom, to the way that I dress, everything has to embody those core values. And that is why I think you say that my brand is so on point. And that's why I'm so in love with branding. It takes years to figure out your values, but you have to really look for them and understand what are those top three things that you care so much about. And I started evaluating my world, like everything around me, in terms of those values. And I realized that, for example, the friends that I connect to the most are the ones that have the same values. Maybe they're not there. You know, those three are their top values, but my truest friends, they're very authentic. Like they're very themselves. They don't care. They're unapologetic. They don't care what other people are thinking or what everybody else is doing. They just do their own thing. They're very courageous. And that's why I also admire them and want to be close to them. And then they're so transparent, which I think for me, that's the core one. I can't be with someone that is fake or that, you know, it feels like they're hiding something. That's just, it really doesn't go with me.
Yeah, that's really great. And I talk about, we've been thinking a lot about on this show, you know, the difference of creating from a place where you feel centered and balanced versus creating from a place where you're feeling frantic and anxious and all over the place. And I've noticed for myself, as you're saying that, it's so much about, these values, it's, you know, you saying, you know, when I talk to my mom or when I make a post or whatever, it's not that these are rules from an external source that says you should be doing them. It's a internal thing that says, I feel imbalance and centered and on my path when I'm acting in this way. And therefore, I'm going to attempt to act in these ways as often as possible. And the same goes for the creative work that you make.
Yes. And you know what I heard the other day? I was having a live that I did with, do you know Nir Eyal? He wrote Indestructible and Hooked. Mm. Very, okay. very
they, yeah, amazing. Those sound familiar to me.
Yeah, exactly. He Hooked is like a huge book. Well, he told me he was defining values as the qualities of the person that you want to become. So I never thought about that because it's all, for me, has always been who I am. But maybe because I already became the person I wanted to become, maybe, I think. And when you're not there, you're not right now the person you want to become, then it's about thinking that, like, what are some of the qualities the person I want to become have? And I think, for example, courage in my case is something that was not part of my core values a few years ago. In fact, it was the opposite. It was comfort. I would always choose comfort over courage. And then they can't coexist. So I had to remove the comfort and replace it with courage. And I'm so happier that I did that.
That's amazing. I think that there's even a discomfort that you have internally when it's almost like courage. It's almost like those true values were your true self even before you became it. And I think that there are those things in my life where the places where I haven't reached my potential in terms of how I'm embodying what I know to be my true values, that's when I feel out of whack. When I feel like, oh, I'm acting in a way that's not with the things that I actually value and believe in. There's that gap between who you are now and who your ideal self or your true self is. Is that's what it sounds like you're saying?
Yeah, exactly that.
Man, that's so good. So I would love to hear about, if you could tell us how your book relates to all the stuff that we've been talking about, how facing your fears and working through this book can help you become your most authentic self.
Yeah. So the book has 10 chapters and it is 10 different fears that hold us back from becoming who we're meant to be. So that's how I split it. And so what I even tell people at the beginning is choose the chapter you can relate to the most. Choose the fear that is holding you back the most. So you don't really need to read chapter one and then chapter two. In fact, I'm doing the launch next week, an event, and I'll be reading the last chapter of the book. And people are like, no, spoiler alert. And I'm like, it's not a spoiler. Actually, you know, that's just one of the 10 different things that hold us back. And so, for example, there's a whole chapter, which is chapter three, about society and how, and this is for the people that they listen too much to the people around them and they don't listen enough to themselves. So it's a little bit on how to lower the volume of the people around you in order to actually make choices based on your own needs and wants and priorities. And then chapter four is everything we've been discussing about today, contrast, compare, what are your values, self-branding, all of that. It's all about authenticity, how to actually tap into your most authentic self. And then chapter five is about haters, you know, how so many people stop exposing themselves and their talents because they're too afraid of what others may think or how can they be criticized, all of that. So everything we talked about today is just a little bit of this book. And it's, like I said at the beginning, it's journey. It's my journey, but you live it with me. So, and I have a lot of questions and exercises throughout my stories so you can start putting all of my tools into your life and start taking action from there. So it's a very actionable book, very emotional too, and it's very personal. So all of these exercises, it's for you to be very honest with yourself. I think that because I'm very honest in the book, so I'm expecting the same from people that are reading it.
Yeah. Is there any favorite exercise that you hadn't mentioned today that from the book that you could give as a tease for what we could expect?
Wow, that's a hard question. Well,
I'm like could just be the browsing one, the
really quick.
That,
like, what is this exercise? Yes, there is actually.
Yeah. Great.
Okay, I got it. It's the in chapter three. I was saying it's about society and how that affects us so much. So I asked people to write down what are the boxes that they were checking during their entire life. And those are the typical boxes from society, right? So I have to get married. I have to find a good job. I need to buy a house, you know, in order for people to know that I am an adult and that I'm doing all right. I need to buy a house. I need to buy a car. I need to, you know, have kids, of course, before 30, you know, then it's too late. And all these like things that we have in our heads, it really changes from culture to culture.
Sure.
It's the expectations that society have over you. And then I challenge people to write their own checkbox, like their own list of things they want to accomplish for themselves that are very different from the things that society is asking them to do. So I think that's a very powerful exercise, because it's not about, you know, we were saying it's really hard to do those 5-year plans or 10-year plans. I'm not even asking you to put a date on these. It's all about just making sure that you know what are the things that you want to accomplish for yourself. And I want to ask you this. If nobody knows that you accomplished that, would it still matter? Because so many people think like, oh, I want to have this kind of car or watch, or I want to go to this place. And it's just because they want to brag about it. They want to belong. They want to do what everybody else is doing and have as much as their friends or even more. But what are the truest things that would fulfill your soul that even if no one knows about it, you'll be happy that you did them?
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think what I feel like that might do is it'll help you see which values are you living by that aren't your own. You know, as you make that list, it's going to become apparent that, you know, this list that's been given to you by society, these achievements that have been in the back of your mind that you've been working towards, when you start noticing which of those aren't in line with your values, you're going to notice like, oh, I have all these other core values that I've been living that aren't actually coming from my true self.
Yes. Very important. Well,
That's great. thank you. We'll put all the stuff in the show notes, place where you can get the book and find Michelle's project and find her on Instagram. She's got really fantastic Instagram. Is there anything else that you want to tell my audience or places they can go to get all of your good stuff?
So I think the best place they could go is find Hello Fears on Instagram. That's where I share about everything that is going on in my life. I do it in a very vulnerable and unapologetic way. So I think they're going to have fun and relate to a lot of the things that I'll be saying and just be part of the Hello Fears community.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Do you ever do any of your own events? Because I know you do a lot of speaking to organizations, but if people want to just come hear you speak, is there ever opportunities for that? Well, you know, once we get out of this lockdown.
Exactly. So once we get out of the, my entire plan was to launch the book and do a full blown tour around the United States and go everywhere, because I do love to organize my own events. So I get to connect with the people that have been following me. And now we are stuck here and I'll be launching a book from the internet. But as soon as we're out of and we can fly again, I will be doing events all around the country.
Great. Last question, a quick one. Now that we're in lockdown, like you said, it's hard to be making memories. It's hard to be living life to the fullest when you're locked in your apartment or your house. Is there anything that's helped you get a little bit of that energy that you found in the 100-day project of facing your fears? Or is there anything that, any little things that you've been able to do that have helped you get a little bit out of the routine and mundane?
I think that this is a time for us to fail. And so if you think about it that way,
that's good.
It's a time for you to try different things that maybe you thought at one point and then you're like, I'm not sure if that would work. This is the time to do it. I mean, the world is failing. The whole world. Yes. Like,
That's so good. You're so right. Yes, absolutely. This is the time. If there's never, we talked about this on an episode I had with a buddy of mine, Johnny Pemberton, an actor, comedian guy, about, like this, he didn't put it exactly that way, but it makes so much sense. Like the whole system is failing. If it's not comfortable to fail right now, when will it be? So what can you try creatively? What can you just give it a shot? even though you know it's going to be terrible or whatever. Yeah, that's
great
advice.
I think as creatives, this is an amazing time for us to challenge ourselves to do things differently. Like I was like, okay, how do I do my conferences online? So the first one I did was my own, like not for a client. I basically democratized my talk. My following, like my audience, they've been wanting to hear this talk for a long time, and they've always been disappointed that I only speak at corporations. And if they don't belong to one that would hire me, then they don't get the chance to see me. And so I was like, you know what? I'll open my talk to everybody. And I even charged for it. And I had over 300 people that paid ticket, and then 200 that I invited. They were 500 people in that event that I did via Zoom a month ago already. And for me, it was a challenge because I'm used to a very big stage, right? And whenever they introduce me, I come on dancing. So I was like, how do I do that from my home? And so I asked my husband to be my MC. So when we started the event, they would see him first, and then he would introduce me and teach people how to use the platform correctly, how to do the chat, all of it. And then he's like, welcome, Michelle Poehler. And then he left. There's no one. And then I click to my music and I start dancing in my living room, and I made people dance in their own living rooms. So it was like, how do I transform this whole experience that I'm used to doing it live into an amazing experience that from your couch, right? And so, and I think that we were able to do a really good job through the chat, through social media, like using all of the different mediums at the same time combined, so we create a full experience, and we all felt connected while we were all separated in our own homes.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. That's a great idea. Well, thank you so much for doing this. This was an absolutely fantastic episode. There was a bunch of stuff that even surprised me. I didn't know we were going to get to. Thanks for taking the time and giving so much to the Creative Pep Talk audience.
I'm so happy to do it because I don't normally get to talk about creative stuff. They always ask me only about my fears and my project, and I want to talk about the creative process. So I'm super excited that we did this, and you're an amazing interviewer. Thank you.
Thank you. See ya.
Bye.
Michelle, thank you so much for your generosity, your time, and sharing your experience and your insights. We love you. You are Creative Pep Talk people. This is Creative Pep Talk material, man. Facing your fears. You know I'm into that. Go buy Michelle's book, Hello Fears. Go get it wherever books are sold. You're not going to regret it. It's a beautiful thing. It's going to sit on your shelf. Everyone's going to be like, what's that book? It looks so good. I bet it's fun to read. It is. Go check it out. It's personal. It's inspiring. It's colorful. It's got illustrations in there. Get on it. Thanks, Michelle. You're awesome. I can't wait to have you back on the show again. And I can't wait to see you speak again when we get out of this crazy season of humanity. I want to see what season two has in store for this whole thing. I don't know if I do. Anyway, thanks, Michelle. You're awesome. And also, you know who else is awesome? Every one of you Patreon backers. Oh my goodness gracious. We started up in our Patreon game for this podcast. If you don't know, this podcast is partially listener supported. Over the years, you know, I started this thing as a side project, and I've been an illustrator for about a decade, and illustration's been really good to me. But I started diving into the podcast world. I became obsessed. And over the years, we slowly but surely grew and grew and grew into this thing that is Creative Pep Talk now. And if you don't know, it's partially listener supported. So yeah, we do have sponsors, but I will be honest with you, since the whole Corona thing happened, our sponsorship has been a little bit lean. And if you want to be a part of making sure this podcast can continue at the level that it is, you can go back the podcast financially at patreon.com/creativepeptalk and become the lifeblood, become a creative pepperoni with the rest of them. We've been pushing for getting to 500 backers. We're almost at 300 right now. We had like 100 backers just in the past couple weeks. So thank you so much. If you are in a place where finances are flowing and you're feeling great and you're in a financially great place, we could use your help to help this show continue to go at full-fledged ability. But if you are in a place where finances are scary, you don't know where the money's coming from, you just got laid off, you know, whatever, we don't want your money. I'm not kidding you. We exist to help you thrive, to get into the best possible state between your creativity and your finances. We don't want to take away from that or be a burden on that. If you're in that place, don't give us your money. This is a free gift to you, and we're happy to bring it to you. And I'm thrilled that we get to. And all of you who are currently backing, you are giving this gift to people that are struggling in their creative practice and need a boost. So you are awesome. We celebrate you. We see you. We've had a lot more. I've been sharing these little peppy talks for $2 plus backers. It's $2 per episode of the show. Plus, I do these little episodes of the podcast that are secret. And it's just really me sharing what's going on in my world, what I'm wrestling with and thinking about now. And I've used it a little bit as a sounding board, asking the creative pepperonis, what do you think about this? I'm thinking about moving to this. These are the things I'm creatively struggling with. And I think that there's something to glean that's totally different than what I share on this show, which is mostly stuff that I'd already learned or things that I already put in practice on a regular basis. So it's really cool. Thank you so much for making that happen. Patreon.com/creativepeptalk. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Alex Sugg for our soundtrack. Thanks to Jordan Aaron for editing this show. We got a new editor in the house. Woo! We're super pumped about that. Thanks to all of you for listening. And until we speak again, stay pepped up. I mean, stay pepped up, man! Woo!